Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I am the Bill Arnold part of that sentence. I am awfully glad you've joined me today. We've got a great hour planned. Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. And if you have a relationship concern, issue, problem, you're going to want to call us 877-933-2484. We're going to talk about the big communication word today, and we're going to cover a lot of ground. So call with any questions, or you can also email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. We really love when people call, though, because we can sometimes ask additional questions to help answer the question the best, okay? So it's Monday, and today is, we're so glad to be broadcasting today, and tomorrow starts our fall share, and that's going to be really fun for the next 3 days. We're going to be hearing great stories of what Faith Radio is to people and how it's making a difference in their life, and I love these days. They're going to be so much fun, and so we're looking forward to that, but if you have never donated to Faith Radio in the past, know that we would love for you to become part of that giving family, and you make all the difference in the world. That's why we continue to do what we do, is because you let us do it. So, and God willing, we're going to stay strong for many, 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 many more years to come. All right, let's take a little break. And when we come back, Dr. Glenn Pickering is in studio. And again, I'll give you that number, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. One more time. They say they always do it three times. 877-933-2484. We'll be right back.
Our fall fundraiser known as Share is coming September 11th. Hi, I'm Dick Whitmer, station manager of Faith Radio. Your support of this ministry really does change lives. Give a gift, change a life. It's that simple. If you're not already a member of our monthly support team, would you consider joining? $100 per month or a one-time gift of $1,200 covers the entire cost of a broadcast day. Consider that when you visit myfaithradio.com, and thank you for your support.
Your prayers matter and are heard by God. When you pray, lives can be changed. Each week, the Faith Radio prayer team joins together to pray for relationships to be strengthened, finances to be increased for God's glory, for our leaders to follow God's will, and for so much more. Will you join us? The Faith Radio prayer team, made up of hundreds of listeners, receives an email with each week's prayer focus. You can be a part of the Faith Radio prayer team by signing up at myfaithradio.com.
Do I love you, oh my, do I, honey, did I do?
Welcome back to the show. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here, and Dr. Glenn Pickering is with me in studio. He's written one of my favorite books. It's called Playing Tag, You're Not It. And it's a book filled with wisdom and examples and lots of challenging exercises. And it will help you build a rich, full life, especially when it comes to communication. Now, Glenn, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
I can give you all of your illustrious credentials.
Right. You should, of course.
Of course I should. you're a pastor. You're a psychologist. You're an engineer. You cover just about everything.
I also really like collecting coins for those who are keeping track at home.
All right. All right. So if you have a question about relationships, call us 877-933-2484. Glenn, talk a little bit about your book of Tag, because just to refresh our audience's minds about what Tag is.
Great. Love to do that. One of the things I've really come to understand, over time is that in any two people are interacting, two things are happening, right? They're interacting at a couple different levels. There's sort of the information. I'm just sharing information about what I'm thinking or what I want. But I'm also sharing an attitude towards you. So, and this happens in every single interaction we have, no matter how big or how small. So even if something as trivial as I'm sitting next to my daughter and I want her to pass the salt to me, I could say, hey, hon, when you're done with the salt, can you pass it to me? Now notice the content is I would like the salt. The attitude towards her is, I care about you. I think you're really great. I could make that same request like, hey, if there's any salt left when you're done with it, you want to pass it over? Now, see, the content is the same. I want you to pass the salt. But the attitude that gets communicated towards them is one of contempt or being condescending or whatever. And when the person reacts badly or defensively, that's the part they're actually reacting to. Mm. And so many, many couples, you know, I've been doing counseling now for many, many years. Oftentimes they come to me and say, Glenn, we don't communicate or we have communication problems. And they sort of think, I think, that the content somehow gets them off track. And I think, no, it is literally the attitude that you're communicating towards the other person that gets that conversation off track.
That's a great place to start.
Okay.
So you know, what about if a person reads into the attitude? Will you politely say, would you pass the salt? And their brain goes to, he thinks I oversalt my food.
Uh-huh. Which can happen because we're humans. You've heard me talk about the game of tag ad infinitum.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole goal of the game of tag, if you're a little kid, is to not be it. And you can either do that by avoiding the person who is it, or if you are it, then by tagging somebody else. And so you see the same thing in those little teeny interactions. So I could either say to my daughter lovingly, hey, when you're done with that, could you pass it? Or, hey, when you're done with that, if there's any left, would you give it to me? And notice that I am making her it now. I'm making her the bad one. And in that game now, I have actively made somebody else the bad one. And she will react like that. And all of us, if you're little kids and think about playing the game of tag, as soon as somebody tags you, what do you want to do?
Tag somebody else.
Yeah, then you want to tag somebody else. Mm-hmm. So then she's going to
reach out. You can't stand being it.
Right, exactly. So she's going to say, well, why are you being so mean? Or you're a jerk. Or she's going to throw the salt at me like I'm a jerk and now I'm the bad one. And really now the whole conversation now from this point on is not about the salt or anything else. It's only about who's the bad one. And sometimes couples say, well, Glenn, how can I tell if I'm playing tag? And I think, well, if you walk around on eggshells in your house, this is you playing tag by trying not to be it in the first place. Because remember, if I'm M-tagged, I want to tag somebody else. But if I'm not, what I try and do is keep a lower profile as possible, not get too close to the person that's it, not be around anybody who might be it. And when I'm walking around on eggshells, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying not to be it.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say to couples, so if one of you feels like you're walking around on eggshells, or both of you, or if you have the same argument over and over again, because, see, when we play tag, remember, we don't actually ever resolve the content because we're so busy defending ourselves against what feels like an attack that the content, the actual conversation never gets resolved, which means we're going to have to come back and have that one over again.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel like you walk around on eggshells, or if you feel like you have the same conversations over and over again that never get resolved, or if one or both of you walk around with that sort of feeling of increasing bitterness or resentment or distance, I promise you, you're playing tag.
What if I'm replaying old tapes in my head?
Like, oftentimes, that's exactly how the game starts.
Maybe I started recording those tapes when I was 10.
Right, exactly. So, for example, perfect example, like what you said before, what if somebody else just asks a question and I make it in a game of tag? So let's say I grew up in a family that doesn't have any money. My whole life, I think, I'm never going to have enough money. I never have enough money. And then my wife says, hon, do we have enough money to go buy this? And I think, what do you think I made out of money? Like, see, all she's doing is asking a logical question.
Right.
And I go right to that place of, I'm the bad one. I never have enough money. I can never support my family because that's really kind of what I believe about myself. And so the game gets triggered mostly by those old beliefs. I have some really old beliefs about myself. And if somebody touches on one of those, I get all defensive. And boy, that game of tag starts in a hurry at that point.
Okay, now if I asked you that question and you got defensive, what would be an appropriate response for me? Would I say, boy, honey, did I just trigger something?
Yeah, very gently. It seems like maybe I triggered something, or maybe I asked that wrong, or did I sound like I was being harsh with you? Because I want to be careful. Jesus said, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? You don't see the log in your own eye. If me and another person are having a bad conversation, it's possible they just got triggered and they're just playing tag for no reason. It's also possible, though, that I somehow sent that message by what I said or what I didn't say. And so I always want to ask, was there something I said or something I did that triggered that for you? Because I want to know about them and what their triggers might be. But I also want to know if there's anything I'm doing that's bringing that about, because I want to always take a look at the log in my own eye first.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, one of the favorite lines from your book tag, and I've memorized this, is, what is it about my behavior that contributes to our issues?
Nice. I love it.
I do, too. That is brilliant. Such a...
I wish I'd have written it.
I hope you did. Because it would be so disarming for someone to hear that.
Right. That's what I think, too. And so I was talking to you guys beforehand about how that quote about Jesus saying, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? You don't see the log in your own eye. I've heard so many people talk about that, even give sermons about it, that sounds sort of judgmental or legalistic. But I think Jesus isn't trying to be judgmental or legalistic. He's just trying to say, if there's a struggle with you, between you and any other person, it's easy to see what they're doing wrong. But we need to ask a way more powerful question. What am I doing that might be contributing to the way that this is going wrong? Because once I can take ownership of my half of that, then I know what I can do to change that interaction.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, how do you love someone when they annoy you?
Here's the interesting thing. If they annoy me, it's very likely that that thing just happened in reverse, that they said something that triggered me.
Okay.
Maybe I have a trigger about that or some belief about that that just got triggered. So, again, my first question is going to be, what is it about my beliefs or my thinking that got triggered by that remark? Because maybe they were being a jerk, but honestly, they might just well have been asking a perfectly logical question
mm-hmm.
that I find uncomfortable for my own reasons.
Mm-hmm. When you are in your counseling office, do you find couples that come in and say, we're spending more time apart than we are together?
Yes, because this... You know, if me and another person play tag a lot, so we always walk away feeling bad about ourselves, or like I got tagged, or like I'm it, so I walk away from a conversation feeling bad. See, I start looking for ways to not interact with that person. I talk to couples all the time about how in any given marriage or any relationship, really, one of two things is always happening. We're always either going closer and closer together or drifting further and further apart. Because if we are loving each other, then we want to keep spending more and more time together. If we play tag, we start looking for reasons to spend less and less time together. And honestly, we're always doing one of those two things.
Mm-hmm. All right. If you have a question for Dr. Pickering, give us a call, 877-933-2484. You can also email me a question, bill@myfaithradio.com. But we'd sure love to hear your voice on the radio. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, lots more with Dr. Glenn Pickering in just a minute. It is 17 minutes after the hour. I have Dr. Glenn Pickering in studio. I always love this time. If you have a question about a relationship, maybe you're in a tough situation, maybe you just don't know what to do, and you need some help. So give us a call, 877-933-2484, and we'll get your question on the air and hopefully give you some insight. Glenn, what about if you're having a hard time relating to your partner's issues? You have a hard time being patient or processing it well, or I don't know.
You're very likely to, and here's how come. I believe this with my whole heart. We marry people with very similar strengths to ours and the flip side of our weakness. I want to say that here again because it's so cool. We marry people with very similar strengths to ours and the flip side of our weakness. So if my strengths are, I'm really serious about my faith, I'm really funny, I care a lot about other people, and my weakness is that I'm too controlling, I'm very likely to marry a gal who's really serious about her faith, who's really funny, who's very caring, and too passive. So the strengths are going to line up, but the weaknesses are going to be the flip side. So I'm going to look at her and think, how can you be so passive? How can you not have an opinion? And she's going to look at me and think, why do you fill up all the air? Why do you act like only your opinion matters? And we're going to realize, oh, we actually have the flip side of the same problem. We're not very good at being a team where you have an opinion and I have an opinion and then we figure it out.
Mm.
So if I'm annoyed by my partner's stuff, which I almost will be, of course, it's important to remember it's not that I don't have an issue. I have exactly this issue except from the other side. Which makes it a whole lot easier to be compassionate because I realize, oh, you have the same struggle I do. You just had the flip side of that same struggle.
I think I get that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Don't make me explain it back to you, but I think I get it. What about if you don't feel understood? That's got to be a big one, I'm guessing.
It's a huge one. And oftentimes when people don't feel understood, it's because right away the other person does get defensive and start acting like what I'm saying is actually about them. I often talk to people about how in the game of tag, we don't tell the truth and we don't hear the truth. And when I say we don't tell the truth, what I mean is the only truth I know is about myself, how I'm feeling, how I'm thinking, what I want, what my vision is. But in the game of tag, I don't like talking about myself because I might get criticized or judged. So I either don't talk at all because I'm playing silent tag, or I talk about what you did wrong, or me and you talk about what Rebecca's always doing wrong. But I'm never just talking about myself. So when I speak, I don't tell the truth because I'm not talking about myself. But when I listen, I don't hear the truth because then I make whatever anybody else is saying as if it's about me. So somebody else says, boy, I had a hard time getting here to the studio today. And I say, are you saying I didn't have a hard time? It's hard for me too, you know. What? Like we instantly take what somebody else is literally just saying about themselves and act like it's about us.
Mm.
And so if we feel misunderstood, it's very likely that that's happening. We're trying to express to the other person something about ourselves. And we can just literally feel how they're responding from the place where they made that about them. And honestly, we all do it. We're so childish. And I don't mean that badly. I just mean we're like little kids. Like little kid thinks what? Everything's about themselves.
Right.
And if
right.
we're not careful, we start with that same assumption.
Yeah. Got a caller on the line.
Right.
Would prefer to remain anonymous from all Minneapolis. Right. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Glenn.
Sure. My question, I was just going to ask and listen, but my question is, what do you do if you got divorced and you're still in love with your ex after 4 years and you can't get over her?
Appreciate the call. Glenn?
That's a really great question. And I'm assuming it's not hypothetical.
No.
Okay. Didn't mean to be sarcastic. I just want to make sure we're just being clear.
I didn't take it that way.
Okay, good. Thank you. I get that you're still in love with your wife. So tell us just two sentences about the divorce.
One day she woke up, we were in bed. She told me with a tear in her eyes, she doesn't think she can stay married to me anymore. That was it.
Hmm. She didn't say why?
And none of our friends couldn't believe it. Four of our six kids couldn't believe it. I was just shocked.
Okay.
We didn't have a perfect marriage. We had issues like everybody else.
Sure.
But we've always worked through them. And after 24 years, I thought we were in the clear.
Right. Yeah, I want to say two gentle things, and then I want to talk about what you might want to do. One, whenever something happens like that, that's a really serious loss, we grieve the loss. And I think I get that. So there's this person in your life, a very important person, you lost that person. That by itself is a sad thing. But it's also there's also a loss of the dream of what that relationship could have been. So after all those years, we're not just loving the relationship that we're in. We have big visions about, and then we're going to retire and travel around, and that's going to be really good. You know what I mean? It's like, so we lose in a divorce, then we lose the relationship, but we also lose our dream for what that relationship is going to be. And oftentimes, if a person tells me, Glenn, I'm having a really hard time letting go, it's because they're either not letting themselves grieve the loss of the relationship or they're not letting themselves grieve the loss of that dream. And so that's my first question for you. Does either of those ring true to you?
Probably not the loss, grief. I still have my wedding ring. My therapist told me not to. I just, but I dream about it all the time.
Yeah. So for you, that connection is still very real. I mean, very deep.
Yeah.
I think oftentimes we get stuck in our grieving. Again, so I'm just asking to see if this makes sense to you. We get stuck on the question why. Like, why did that happen? Why did she do this? Why did it end like that? And I think we get stuck in that question instead of just acknowledging it did end like that. And so when I ask the question about grieving, about if you're letting yourself totally grieve it, I think if there's a part of you that's still asking the how come question, it's possible that that's a way of not just letting yourself be really sad. And so I wonder if there's a way in which you could let yourself just be, how can I say, a little more in touch with how just sad it is that it ended exactly the way that it ended, instead of getting sort of stuck on the why question.
Oh, no, I'm sad a lot.
Okay.
But she was the one. And the more questions I have more than that is just the, I stand on the Bible, let no man separate what two of people are together. I ask, why would he allow this to happen?
Right.
Some of the questions I asked about that.
Right. Yep. And I think I'll just talk about myself for a second. So my dad died when I was 19, and I had many, many, many of those same questions. He was the best man I knew, honestly. And, like, how could God let that happen? And And the reason I'm talking to you about letting yourself grieve the fact that it did happen is that at some point I had to let go of that question and just think, okay, that did happen. What am I going to do now? And I think until we let ourselves just really acknowledge, yep, that did happen, then it doesn't free our spirit up enough to ask the question, okay, now what? And so without in any way minimizing how deeply connected you are to your ex, which honestly I admire like crazy that you are, it's still important to be asking yourself not so much why did that happen, but instead to be asking yourself the question, okay, now what? Given that this did happen, God, what can I do with my life that would be something constructive to come out of all that ugliness? Because when it says in Romans 8 that in all things God works to bring about the good, I believe that, that even in our darkest times, even literally in the times you wouldn't wish on your enemy, that God can still make something powerful and good come out of that. And so I would literally just prayerfully ask you to be really reflective on that question. Where am I going to go from here? If something constructive could come out of this, what would that be?
It's powerful, Glenn.
So would you suggest not to listen to sermons or examples of people who've gotten married after divorce after 5 years? And there's preachers out there that people wrote books out that I've read,
right,
that says that's still possible and have that hope.
Well, here's the problem with that. Hey, those things do happen, so, and God bless them when they do. But see, if you cling to that hope, then it keeps you from doing what I'm asking you to do about moving on, thinking, okay, now what? Because here's what I know. That doesn't happen because I keep hoping that happens. It actually, weirdly enough, only happens when I let go, start thinking, okay, now what? That's the, I mean, I promise you, every one of those people will tell you at some point, that's what they decided. And then, in that freedom of that, somehow then the other person could come back.
Okay.
Thank you for calling. We will be praying for you day.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's a tough one. So thank you, Glenn. That was, those stories are very sad. There's no question.
Yeah.
A lot of man's family's life gets ripped apart. It's hard to hear those stories, but I think your wise counsel was great.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. If you have a question for Glenn, 877-933-2484. It is, we're going to go to a break here in just a minute. But we will have time to take your call, or you can also email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. If you have a question you'd rather email and you don't want to go on the air, we'd still love to have you on the air. But 877-933-2484. We'll take a very short break and be right back. It is 31 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here with Dr. Glenn Pickering in studio. If you have a question about a relationship and you would like a little bit of wise counsel, give us a call, 877-933-2484. Got a couple of callers on the line. Let's get to one, Dee Dee in Apple Valley. Hello, Dee Dee. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Glenn.
Hi. I wanted to ask some just advice on how to proceed with something. My husband and I are both in our 50s. He has been diagnosed with early onset dementia and has left me.
Okay.
He believed that I was having affairs, and I've continued to fight for him and fight for the marriage. And we renewed our vows after he got diagnosed. And my desire is to try to hold those vows and to try to take care of him. It has probably been the darkest time of my life, and I have to be prepared now that the courts may go ahead and put through a divorce whether I want it or not.
Ooh. when people get dementia, especially at the beginning, it's really scary because they can literally feel like this weird thing is happening to them. And sometimes they even feel like I'm losing my mind. I can't keep my thoughts straight. And so they're scared a lot of the time, like fearful. And so we're likely to hear them say out loud their most fearful thoughts, which in his case is that you might be having an affair or might leave him or, you know, those kind of really scary thoughts that he's having. And for me, when I've dealt with people in my family who are going through that process, it's been really, really helpful to me to remember that's just a fear of theirs. That's not even what they actually think. That's not even them. It's a fear that they have. And they're expressing that because right now they're going through this time when they probably feel scared probably all the time and out of control of themselves, which is a very scary feeling. And so right. If I'm you, always when I'm with them, I'm just trying to think, my honey is just scared. My honey is just scared. My honey is just scared. So I'm not going to bother defending myself or talking about how I'm not having an affair. I'm just going to ask real questions like, honey, how can I be helpful to you? What can I do that would be comforting to you? What can I do that would help make you feel more secure right now? I'm just going to stay focused on right now, and how can I be comforting to you right now? Because I get you just really, really scared.
He left.
Yep, I get that. And
refuses to have any discussions with me. His family has determined that the best thing would be for a divorce. So I have no access to him. He is being told that the right thing to do is to leave me.
Yeah.
And so,
What was your relationship with his family like before all this happened?
Neither one of us were close to his family.
Okay. Is there even...
He wasn't, so I wasn't. It's a
right.
second marriage.
Right. That
so
is that is harder,
he,
I think. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
And, well, he wasn't close with his family. He and I were very close. We
right.
did everything together. And so it is, I think what you just said to the previous caller made some sense to me, that I think the reason that this has been so difficult is that I have refused to ask the question, what now, God? Because
right.
I thought we based our lives on Christ, and we
right.
we got married in the church, and we were gloriously happy. I don't...
Right. Honestly, my heart breaks for you that this is happening, so just know that that's true. I do
but
think...
I can't. I can't give up.
Here's the great thing. If you just do what you just said, so I love that it kind of resonated with you about asking God, okay, what now? Because sometimes we're almost afraid to ask that question because we think in our humanness we know the answer. The answer is to stay and fight, or the answer is to leave, or who knows what. But almost
right.
always God has an answer that's way bigger than what I think. And
right.
And so if I'm really willing to just think, God, now what? Not how do I recreate the past? How do I move gently forward? I will always be both comforted and almost shocked by the answer because it will come so far out of anything I might have thought about. So he might ask you to pray and ask if there's even one person in his extended family that you might connect to just as a place to begin. Or he might ask you to quit right now and just prayerfully get your own stuff together. We don't know what's going to come out of that, but I just know that you're right, that resonated with you, that you need to ask what now, without assuming that you know the answer to that. Because so often I've gotten in the way of God's working in my life because I thought I already knew the right answer.
Right, and if I stand solely on Scripture that I made a promise, I made a vow,
right.
and that I have to do everything I can to honor that vow, but...
Right.
I have to be prepared for God's answer
right.
possibly to be something else. And
well, here's
you know,
the thing.
But that doesn't mean that even if the courts do that, it doesn't mean that I'm not his wife, right? In God's eyes, I still am, right?
Right. And here's what I think. You're right about God will want you to honor those vows. And so even if you just, and who knows what God's going to put on your heart, because we don't know. So I'm not even going to pretend I do know. I do know this, though. Whatever God puts on your heart, it will still be a way of respecting and honoring those vows. I know that for certain.
Thank you, Davey,
okay.
for calling. God bless you and your situation.
Thank you.
Yep, have a good afternoon. All right, we have another caller on the line. John's calling in from Hartford, Connecticut. Hello, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. My question is, I my question is rather not as heavy.
Okay.
I'm a young person, 31. I recently met a woman online. You know, we've been seeing each other. She's visited, I think, 5 or 6 times. I've been down there 5 or 6 times. And we're looking to make the transition towards marriage. And we have to live together in order to really get to know one another. Because I've never lived with this woman. I don't know her well. So I guess really it's just general advice. Like, she's going to move up here. I don't really know her family. I don't really care to know her family all that much, to be truthful. You know, but just general advice for a younger person, I suppose, is what I'm seeking.
I think you're right that unless you live close enough to actually have an interaction fairly often, it's hard to even know then the answer to the question, should we be together or not, because that takes time. So I'm glad you're trying to do something about that. I'm glad you see how important it is that you spend time getting to know her. I flinched a little when you said you didn't care about knowing her family, because that is part of her.
Yeah, that is probably very true.
Yeah, so you want to be careful about that thought. If I really want to know the person in my life, and then I want to know everything about her, her spirit life, her emotional life, her family life. I want to know what she thinks is fun and what kind of gum she likes to chew. So I'd urge you not to rule anything out.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, I know a lot about her, and she's pretty fantastic. So
I'm very
blessed.
Yes, it is a blessing.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's willing to move there makes a statement about where she's at. And my question for you is, are you at that same place?
Yes and no.
Uh-huh.
Mostly yes. You know, like all men, we don't always have our cumulative stuff together when we meet our spouse. It's never perfect. You know, no one ever has that together.
Right.
And, you know, when the Lord weighs on you, you know, he says to you, you know, you have to do these things and you have to lead your household. And you have to apply all the lessons that you've always heard.
Yes.
So it's wild that application is the second part of growth.
I'm
like
so
you
sure
go
it's
through
true.
The whole like spiritual maturity, and then you have to apply the wisdom.
Right. That's why I think it's wise that you want to live in the same city, because I think that's smart, so you can see each other more often. Because you're right; those lessons do take time to implement, and I think that's smart.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And
also, thank you so much, sir. I don't want to take too much of your time.
But just this last thought. Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, John. What was the last thought, Glenn? Because I'd like to hear it.
I'm not going to tell. It's
going.
Right. No, I'm just kidding. I was going to say to John that sometimes when we're in a relationship, we think if I'm with the right person, it shouldn't be a struggle. But see, here's what I know. If I'm with the right person, it will be a struggle. Because if I'm in a relationship that's really distant, sort of disconnected, we hardly know each other, not only do I not have to work on my issues, I don't even know I have issues. Right? But if I'm with a person who really wants to get to know me, who spends time with me, who really asks deep questions because she actually wants to know what's happening in my life, see, any discomfort with intimacy or any discomfort with relationship that I might have is going to come right to the very surface. And so just important to remember, if I'm with the right person, it doesn't mean we don't have issues. It means it makes it almost guaranteed that those issues will come to the forefront at some point.
All right. What about if you feel, Glenn, that you are not getting enough attention? And I think we all want attention,
right?
Especially in key relationships. So what happens when your partner is saying, I don't feel like you're giving me the attention I want?
It is very likely that one of three things are happening. Remember, first of all, I always want to start with myself. So let's say I'm the one that's not getting attention. It's entirely possible that there's a whole series of things that I do and say that make it clear to people that they don't need to pay attention to me.
Hmm. Keep elaborating on that one.
Let's say I'm with a group of 6 people and we're going to go out to lunch and somebody says, hey, Glenn, where do you want to go? And I'm super codependent, so I say, I don't know. I don't care. What do you guys want to do? Well, see, I'm literally telling people that I don't have an opinion or that they don't have to care about my opinion or they don't have to listen to my opinion. And if I play that passive game of tag where I don't want to be it, so I never want to offer an opinion because what if I get judged? I don't share my opinion. I don't tell people what I'm thinking. And eventually they quit asking. So first of all, I have to ask myself the question, if I'm not getting attention, is there anything I'm doing so that I'm literally telling people not to pay attention to me? Second, I need to ask myself, mm-hmm. what kind of attention is it that I'm asking for? Because if I say to my partner, you don't pay enough attention to me, they might think, Colleen, we go on a date every week. We do this, we do that. I don't get it. So I have to be clear, what is it I'm asking for exactly? Because I just think sort of vague thoughts like that are just going to confuse the other person, and then they're going to get all defensive. So I want it as much as I can to just be really clear, here's the kind of attention I want. And then third, I just have to be really, really, really clear in my own head that I have to be willing to give exactly that kind of attention back to them. Because sometimes we get caught up in our own stuff and we don't actually ask ourselves, am I willing to give the thing that I'm asking to receive? And if I'm in a relationship that works, then the answer to that question has to be yes. And if it's not, then I have to ask myself some painful questions like, why not?
Interesting. Another question about vices. What happens when there's vices in people's lives? And I don't really like the fact that you do this. And are you really playing that fantasy football? That thing's gotten to be kind of a serious deal. Like, you're spending a lot of time doing that, and I think you're spending money, too.
You're not criticizing my fantasy football.
I'm not. I'm just saying. I'm just saying little vices that pop up, little things that kind of make you go, is this going to get worse?
Okay, so let's come back to where I started. That remember, we're always communicating sort of information, but also our attitude towards the other person. So, again, we're going to purposely make it too black and white, but I could ask that question. I could make that point a couple different ways. I could say, like I'm talking, like I'm the, you know, prosecuting attorney. You're spending way too much time on fantasy football. List all my examples of why they are with a very clear, harsh message about that they're a bad person because they're doing this. And, of course, they're just going to get all defensive, and that's we're just going to have that argument over and over again. Or I could say, and I'm going to need to be prayed up and make sure God has my heart in the right place. I could just say, hon, I'm a little concerned about how much time you're spending on fantasy football, and I'm wondering if that's starting to bug you too. Now, in both ways, Sam, this content is the same, but one communicates clearly that I think you're a jerk because of this, and one communicates clearly I really, really care about you, and one of those ways will work and one of them will not.
Mm-hmm. All right, Glenn, are there relationship problems you just can't fix? I mean, if you have contempt for each other, is that something you can fix or is that unfixable?
It's totally fixable, but again, it's going to start with me asking myself, okay, what do I need to change? If we're both treating each other with contempt, I could look at the other person and saying, you're doing it wrong. And maybe it's even true. But again, I have to ask myself a way more direct and way more painful question. Where do I get off having contempt for another human being? Because here's what I know. If that's how I treat this person in my life, that's how I'm going to treat the next person. And so if people who are in that contemptuous relationship say to me, Glenn, should I get in or should I stay in or get out? I say, it doesn't matter. Because until you change the way you treat people, you're just going to have the same relationship with somebody else, which is why Jesus said, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? We have to ask ourselves, what's my half of that? What do I need to do about my half?
Because
otherwise, I just keep repeating the same problem everywhere I go.
Yeah. All right, Glenn, let me take a break. When we come back, I'd like to ask you some questions about control issues. I think we all have desires to feel control or be in control, and I wonder if that's a concern with any of our listeners. If you have a question for Glenn, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Otherwise, after a short break, we'll be right back. It is 12 minutes until the top of the hour. Hope you're had a great day, and if you're driving home in the car, maybe you've got not too much time before you're going to be home. So we've got 12 minutes left with Dr. Glenn Pickering. I was just on his website, glennpickering.com. It's glennpickering.com. And I'm thinking about some of the people that might want a little piece of you, Glenn, but don't know how to do it. And I see on your website, under the consultation menu, that there's an opportunity for a brief 20-minute consultation with yours truly.
Absolutely. Anybody can click on that, and that sends an email directly to me. Let me know you want to consult with me, and I will email you back, and we'll set that up.
That's fantastic.
Simple as can be.
That's glennpickering.com. Talk about how control can be such a deal breaker in communication.
Well, here's why it's a deal breaker.
I don't mean deal breaker. I mean, there's got to be a better expression.
That's a perfect expression. Okay. And here's how come.
I got lucky then.
I know. Well,
I should just stay quiet.
Cheap shot now and then.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So, here's the thing. people always think that the opposite of control is letting go. And, you know, you've heard lots of people say we've got to let go and let God, which is actually a terrible saying because it implies that the goal is to go from where I'm on the field and God is on the sideline to the place where God is on the field and I'm on the sideline. And I think, no, we're invited into this powerful, amazing, life-changing relationship where we do things together. So it turns out that the opposite of control is not letting go. The opposite of control is letting people be on the team with me.
I like that.
Now, if I grew up not trusting people or thinking people are going to hurt me or thinking I don't want to be criticized, so I play tag and I keep my thoughts to myself, see, then I never let people be on my team with me. And that actually is a deal breaker because if people can't be on my team with me, so they don't feel like they're going through life with me, so they always feel basically disconnected from me, like I'm sort of my own separate unit, well, then those people will drift out of my life because they just don't feel a connection to me.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, we have another caller on the line. Would like to remain anonymous. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Glenn.
I do. So my wife has divorce papers. We've done one joint counseling session together. She's gone to two by herself, and I think I'm probably at five or six by myself. And she doesn't want to work on our marriage. We've got three kids at home. People that I talk to for advice have said, you know, maybe, you know, some sort of intervention. The last time I was at the counselor, she said that might work. And I just don't know if I wait and pray about it, if that just a little more direction.
Right. So the problem with an intervention is it's literally set up as a me against you. And if I'm literally dealing with someone who is an alcoholic, for example, is literally going to kill themselves if something doesn't happen, maybe a me against you conversation is the only thing that can work.
Yep.
But what I'm thinking is way, way, way more often what's helpful is a me and you conversation. So let's say I'm you and my wife says, hey, I'm willing to go to counseling. I'm not willing right now to work on our marriage. Okay. Then I could get all defensive. I could even get confrontational. Or I could ask her a way more helpful question. It's like, what do you think each of us need to work on right now? In other words, if each of us are just busy taking our own inventory, doing what Jesus asked, trying to see the log in our own eye, what do you see as yours? What do you see as mine? Because even if we're not working on a marriage together right now, we can each be working on the things that make it so that our marriage doesn't work the way it's supposed to, which honestly is the first step towards working on our marriage. So, so I keep thinking, how can we incorporate her instead of confronting her?
Right. You know, but right now she just doesn't even want to do much about even with trying to talk about anything with me. When I ask, she says, why are you pushing it?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right. And again, if we don't get defensive, and I get this is not easy, so I'm not trying to say this is simple.
Yeah.
Then we slow down long enough to actually hear what the other person's asking us. And
right.
I would bet 5 cents that part of what she's saying to you is, hey, I don't feel like you care about me as a person. You just think our marriage should stay together, and you're doing whatever you can to force that to happen instead of actually getting to know what's happening to me, which is part of why I want to sort of slow down and say, okay, you know, maybe that's even true, honey. Let's start with assuming maybe that is true. A little hard to hear, but let's say it's probably true.
Right.
Then I just very gently say, great, what are the things that you have always wished I would work on that probably you never told me? And I promise I'm going to start working on them. So it's not that you're pushing the marriage. It's not that you're pushing her in any way. It's just really, really clear, honey, I want to see what I need to work on, and I'm dedicating myself to doing that. So she can see that you're serious about working on your stuff as opposed to sort of serious about pushing an agenda on her, which is, I think, why you're getting that negative reaction, because she senses that she's being pushed towards an end result that she's not ready to commit to.
Okay.
Thank you for calling. I hope that was helpful.
It was. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Glenn, what about being defensive versus accepting influence?
Yeah.
Because it sounds like she was really defensive, and how could it turn around so she could accept some influence?
Well, See, we always have to ask the question the other way around, which is why I gave that caller the advice. See, if she says, hey, why are you always pushing it? See, and if I'm our caller, see, I get defensive. Well, I wasn't really pushing it. I just want to know, blah, blah, blah. Or I could just think, okay, let me take that feedback seriously. Here's what you're saying. You can't tell that I'm actually willing to grow myself. You think I keep inviting you back into our old relationship and you don't want that. I want to be dead clear with you. I'm totally willing to create a new relationship starting with a new me. I'm just trying to figure out what that would look like. So I get that. He might be getting a little bit of a defensive response from her, but I think mostly he's actually just getting the truth. Every time you talk to me about this, I feel like you're pushing me towards the end result instead of really wanting to be with me in the process of walking this out. And we have to be so clear that we're asking each other to be together as we walk it out, as opposed to anybody feeling like I'm being forced to an end goal. Even a salesperson, I'm going to tell them the same thing. If you come across to your customer like you're pushing them to buy something, nobody will buy anything. But if it's just clear to them, you're really just trying to get to know them, you're trying to understand their situation, you might very well make a sale. But it has to start with, I care about you as a person more than the end result. And so often when people talk to their spouse about marriage, it sounds to the other person like, oh, so you're just trying to push a certain end result that I'm not ready to commit to. And, of course, then they get that response.
There's been some tough calls today.
Yeah, but good stuff.
Yeah. So, but if you're fighting for the relationship, that means that it's something worth fighting for.
Right.
And what was hard for me to hear on a couple of these calls, it sounds like there's been some withdrawal.
Right.
And I just wonder what's going on in that other person's world that says, I don't want to fight. It makes me wonder if they're on to somebody else.
Well,
and they haven't said anything yet.
Sometimes it's true, of course. I'm not naive. I get that that happens. But I think what actually happens more often is they get like that, they start withdrawing because what they feel like is, I've told you over and over and you just don't listen. So now they're withdrawing because they feel like, why would I tell you one more time? Which is why if I'm that caller or anybody in that situation, I think, okay, I have to totally change my approach. I have to make it clear. I actually want to know what's happening for you. What is it that I'm doing that's unhelpful?
Mm-hmm.
Because they probably have been trying to tell me a lot of times and they've given up trying to get through to me.
Do we have time? No, I guess we don't. It's always nice, Glenn, when we get opportunities to open up the phone lines and more people are trying to get on board, but we're just run out of time. But if they go to glennpickering.com, GlennPickering, go down to the consultation, you can go online and fill out a form and maybe get a little bit of time with Glenn. And
honestly, you don't have to fill out a form. You just have to click on a button.
Click on a button. There you go. All right. So despite some of the heavy news, Glenn, what might be some things as people are in their car driving home that might be a little breath of fresh air when they walk in the door?
My breath of fresh air is this. Relationships are amazing unless we get them wrong, and then they're really incredibly hurtful. And that in your life, one of those two things is probably happening. And so if you're in the hurtful part, I feel for you. B, it's incredibly empowering to ask myself, what could I do differently? Because probably that same problem in that relationship probably shows up in all my relationships, and I just need to ask myself that question. If God was really trying to teach me something here, if there's a powerful lesson for me in this, what would it be?
Wow, I love that. That's great. Thank you so much, Glenn, for coming into the studio. Always
me.
A pleasure to have you here. Glenn Pickering has been my guest, and it's glennpickering.com if you want to head over to his website and check things out. It's been a great day. Tomorrow we start our fall share, and I can't wait. It's so much fun to hear from all of our listeners, and just want to thank you in advance for the fact you might be willing to help support Faith Radio. Once again, we only do this a couple times a year, and when we do it, we're awfully excited about it. And you'll hear 877-933-2484 about 1,000 times in the next 3 days. So thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow. Have a good night. God bless. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.